Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas. It's The Grapevine at SaverLife.com and the Finger Lakes and New York State in the New York Times just this past week, with Eric Asimov writing about 10 New York State wines to drink now. And you'll recognize some of these producers. Some of them you probably won't. Unfortunately, the Long Island wines are not readily available, as far as I know, in the Rochester area. So he was buying in New York City and writing about wines that he found in shops in New York City. But Long Island wines just sporadically make it here to our area. And I haven't looked for them much in the last couple of years, but I don't think much has changed. Market View Liquor still has by far the biggest selection of New York State wines. And they have a couple from Long Island, but I'm skeptical that you'll find very many of these the five that Eric Asimov wrote about. You might find one or two of these wineries, but not sure that you'll find the exact wines. But you could order them and have them shipped from Long Island. The Finger Lakes ones, some of these may be hard to find because they're not... The ones that he writes about, most of them are not made in really big quantities and not widely distributed. So Market View may not even have them. And if they don't have them, it is less likely that you'll find them in some of the other local wine shops. But the wine shop can order it for you, or you can go visit the winery. These are, the Finger Lakes wineries are... an hour and a half away in general, the ones that he's writing about here. But you should read the article, and even if you're not a subscriber to the New York Times, you can read a few articles a month for free. So you should read this one. I'll give you a couple tidbits from it. Eric Asimov writes that over the last 20 years, the quality of New York State wines has evolved rapidly, particularly in the two leading winemaking regions, the Finger Lakes and Long Island. And he says the Finger Lakes in particular has developed its identity as the leading cool climate wine region in the United States, with exceptional eloquent Rieslings and expressive graceful Cabernet Francs as the signature wines. Goes on to say Pinot Noir may be a third leading variety one day. Talks a bit about Long Island and a little bit about the history of Dr. Frank, Herman J. Wehmer, and the region's come a long ways in a pretty short period of time in the winemaking world. So he listed 10 wines, as he says, in no particular order. Redtail Ridge, their Blaufränkisch, is the first one he listed, and mentions in the write-up that Nancy Ireland has a doctorate in grape genetics. I didn't realize that. Got to interview her about that at some point. She also has a LEED certified production building, which is very unusual. And she also has grapes that are virtually unheard of. Terroir de Gau, Lagrange, don't know anyone else that grows those. And the Blaufränkisch, which is relatively common in the Finger Lakes, also known as Lemberger. Same grape, different names. And he also highlights her sparkling wines, excellent sparkling wines. So also mentioned a Bloomer Creek vineyard, their White Horse Red. And he calls it idiosyncratic, experimental style, always surprises. He says this combination of Cabernet Franc and Merlot, balanced, age-worthy, energetic, and savory, always a great value. Some of these wineries, like Bloomer Creek, they don't advertise. You are not going to read about them, in ads or hear about them anywhere. They sell most of their wines in New York City. And they are all wild ferment. So this is something that many wineries are doing a little bit of, but Kim at Bloomer Creek Vineyard has been doing this for probably at least 8 years now. All their wines wild ferment, and selling most of them in New York City. And that's where they're building their reputation. Their tasting room is pretty small. It's but you can visit. It's right next to Stonecat Cafe, which is about to reopen for the season. One of my favorite restaurants in the Finger Lakes, Scott Signore's, really done an amazing job with Stonecat Cafe. They close for the winter, not just during a pandemic, but every winter. They close for several months, and they are just about to reopen. And again, Bloomer Creek is next door to it, east side of Seneca Lake. I didn't mention Redtail Ridge is on the west side of Seneca Lake, very close to Fox Run, kind of between Fox Run and Anthony Road. Also on this list, Heart and Hands, which is Cayuga Lake on the east side. The New York Times loves their wines. They've been written about quite a number of times. Another winery that does no advertising. It is, you should go for the wine, but also to see their vineyards, which are right there at the tasting room. The most meticulously cared for vineyards that I've seen anywhere in the Finger Lakes and in New York State. And Nancy Ireland's vineyards also really beautifully designed and very, very carefully maintained. But Heart and Hands just struck me as just beautiful, beautiful vines. And I was there a couple years ago right near harvest when the grapes were looking beautiful and ready, and it just looked kind of manicured makes it sound too formal, I guess. It just looked like someone had spent a lot of time in the vineyards getting things just right, and so that's, again, east side of Cayuga Lake. And if you have read, or maybe want to reread or find a copy of Summer in a Glass, Evan Dawson's book from a decade ago, Heart and Hands is featured in there, one of the key wineries that's featured. And you should read that chapter and go visit them. They only make Riesling and Pinot Noir, which is really unusual in the Finger Lakes and in wineries in general, but especially in the Finger Lakes in New York State. Wineries tend to make quite a few different varietals and some experimental ones like Nancy Ireland's Tereldigo, which is a vinifera grape. It's used in Europe, but just not grown here. But Heart and Hands, just Riesling and Pinot Noir, and they're fabulous, delicious. Tom and Susan Higgins, the owners, and again, getting that Summer in a Glass book just to have as a reference. You probably can find a copy online if you can't find it locally. I don't know if it is still locally available, but still very, very relevant. Almost everyone in there is still doing what they did, but doing it even better. And in fact, one of the wines from the Eric Asimov features is the Riesling Ravines Argot Singer Riesling, and there were problems with those vineyards for a couple of years, just because of disease pressure and things, and so that wine has been in the Wine Spectator Top 100. I think several times, the Argot Singer Riesling. Ravines, the winery, is located on near Geneva, west side of Seneca Lake. Their second location, their original location still open, is Cayuga Lake, and that's east side of Cayuga Lake. But they use these Argot Singer vineyards that are on the west side of Seneca Lake for this wine, and that's another reason to read the book. Ravines is featured in Someone in a Glass, but also Sam Argentzinger, who passed away several years ago and owned and managed these vineyards. There's a chapter about him. In fact, it's the only chapter. It's not about a winemaker. It's about him and a truly fascinating person. I would highly recommend reading that chapter and the chapter about ravines while drinking this wine. That would be that would be a lot of fun. And even better, go up on the east side of Seneca Lake to the top of Argentzinger Vineyard. There's a little pull-off, which I think is maybe a turnaround for a school bus, and look out over the lake and the Argentzinger Vineyard as you are reading the book and drinking this wine. It is a spectacular Riesling. And just reading those two chapters will give you really a deep appreciation for the history and the passion of Finger Lakes wine. Also in this list, Nathan Kay, his Finger Lakes Cabernet Franc. Eric Asimov also mentions Chapika Sparkling Wine, which is a partnership with Pascaline Le Pelletier, New York City sommelier and restaurateur. It's a Pet Nat made with, I think, Delaware grapes, which are a native grape, beautiful color. And Chapika was one of the very early Pet Nat or Petulant Naturel wines. They are closed with a crown cap. They are not as sparkly as a Method Champenoise sparkling wine, but are usually less expensive, or somewhat, and really delicious. Of a lighter sparkling wine. And one of the other things that Eric Asimov mentions in this article is that the alcohol levels of the wines in New York State are not the ones that you'll find in many other parts of the world. They're lower alcohol and significantly lower, which means you can drink a little bit more without having such a strong effect. He says the wines around the world often 14% alcohol or higher, and 9 of the 10 wines here from New York State are 11 to 12.8%. I've mentioned this before, but there is some leeway in this percent alcohol. It can be higher. It can be 1.5% higher than is on the label, up to that or lower. And there are probably some wineries that have wines above 14%, and they report a lower alcohol level, that's totally legal. But all I'm saying is that it's if you were to test the alcohol levels of a lot of wines that show 14%. It's probable, that a significant portion of those would have higher alcohol, and it would be kind of fun. Actually, I'll ask around the winemakers in the Finger Lakes and see who has a machine that measures alcohol. You can. There's a lot of ways, or there's several ways to measure the alcohol. You've got to find a winemaker who has maybe a digitized machine that's more accurate. I'm not sure how accurate the traditional methods are for measuring it. And so that may be one of the reasons that there's some leeway given in the percent alcohol. But the point is, it's likely that higher alcohol wines are even higher than they report. The difference between 11% and 14% is quite a bit of alcohol. So, and they tend to be more food-friendly wines, the lower alcohol wines. The higher alcohol can kind of burn your taste buds to some degree. And you can, if you were to take a couple of higher alcohol wines and have them side by side, maybe, I wouldn't do this with reds and whites. I would compare reds to reds, maybe a high alcohol Chardonnay to a stainless steel Finger Lakes lower alcohol Chardonnay. But if you do them side by side and then have them with food, I think you'll see that it really does make a difference in how you taste the food. And wine can cleanse your palate, but alcohol can kind of subdue your palate in a sense. So again, nice article. I just pointed out a few of the highlights from it, and you should go visit those wineries in Long Island. They really dominated. Several of them dominated the New York Wine Classic just the last month. Earlier this month, the results were announced with Pindar and Pominac, both those getting the top Governor's Cup and Winery of the Year awards for New York State. And so there's a Pominac mentioned in Eric Asimov's article here, as well as McCary, Bedell Cellars, Anthony Napa, McCall, Lenz, Shin, Rose Hill Vineyards. And he mentions also a few extra wineries from the Finger Lakes, beyond Dr. Frank and Herman J. Weimer, Forge Cellars, Empire Estate, Cuca Lake Vineyards, and Lakewood Vineyards. Empire Estate, don't go looking for their tasting room. They don't have one. This is Thomas Pasterjak, the longtime sommelier for Nomad in New York City, who went to college at Cornell and loves the Finger Lakes, got married here, and established this Empire Estate brand, which I believe he makes in collaboration with Kelby James Russell at Red Newt. Empire Estate is a Riesling, and also does a red under a different name that escapes me at the moment. So you will find Empire Estate generally at Market View Liquor. You'll find a bunch of wines from Cuca Lake Vineyards and Lakewood, and a number from Forge Cellars. So you may or may not be able to find that Argentzinger Riesling, but Ravines has other Rieslings too. And they don't know if Market View has the Nathan K or Bloom. I don't think they have Bloomer Creek. Again, not widely distributed, but it's an hour and a half away to go down and visit Bloomer Creek Vineyards, and it's a beautiful drive. Shalestone is down that way. Another winery that does really no advertising at all. They've just reopened for the season, somewhat limited hours, and they only make reds. Shalestone is only red wines. That's since they started, which was quite a few years ago. And really, when they started, Rob Thomas, that's Rob and Kate Thomas, he made wines for other wineries and continued to consult with some even after starting his own. But and so he knew what could be done with red wines and decided that's what they would focus on. I think it was 1991 when they started. And at that time, you would have a very hard time convincing almost everyone or anyone outside this region or even within this region that red wines had a future in the Finger Lakes. The red wines got very little respect in the 90s. And that's changed a lot in the last 10, 15 years, but Shalestone was a real leader in that. And they're they're very idiosyncratic in their own way. Their wines are great values, pretty inexpensive in terms of reds, and quite a range of reds for you to try there. But during the harvest, when sort of peak tourism season, September, October, especially October, they close their tasting room because they're busy with harvest, and they really want to be the ones in the tasting room with their customers, and they're too busy in October, main harvest month for vinifera varieties. So they're small tasting room, but it's nice because you won't find limousines and buses and things there. Not that you're finding lots of limousines and buses these days, but those are starting to reappear at the wineries. Things are starting to get busier. The outdoor areas are great right now. The wineries have done a lot to expand those. They have bigger decks, larger patios, more picnic tables, more umbrellas. I mean, they have invested a lot of money. Fox Run and Billsboro have expanded their outdoor spaces a lot, as has Glenora, and it's really, I think you'll find as you visit some of these wineries, there are lots of outdoor tasting options, and they're taking a lot of precautions. One other bit of new, well, a couple things. The Democrat and Chronicle has a nice article this week on the Lake House in Canandaigua, and as the article highlights, it says the Lake House in Canandaigua has hit the big time. They are in Travel and Leisure Magazine's It List for 2021, and this is, according to the article, 73 properties around the world cited as essential to visit, and it says even if each of the resorts and hotels had opened amid the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's, they said, pilgrimage worthy. And so the Lake House is where the Inn on the Lake used to be. And while I'm less shocked about them being on this list, because they were on a even more shocking list a year ago, and I think it was Vogue magazine, Vogue.com, had them as one of the 18 most anticipated hotel openings of 2020 in the world, which there's some very cool properties around the world. And not that the Lake House isn't cool, but I don't think there are too many people, it's not just me, that are surprised that they're on a list of the top 18 most anticipated hotel openings in the world. I think they have some really good PR people. They're well funded, and they're doing some very cool things. I think having pontoon seaplane flights up from the Hudson River in New York City to Canandaigua Lake was a pretty big draw in terms of publicity, and it's a gorgeous property. They put a ton of money into a brand new facility. It's huge, and this list in Travel and Leisure magazine highlights places in 29 countries, Asia, Africa, Europe, this is remarkable that Canandaigua Lake is on this list. There are several billionaires that live on Canandaigua Lake. Canandaigua Lake has one of the highest lakefront property values in the United States, which probably partly because there are several billionaires that live on Canandaigua Lake, but that's also hard to believe. I mean, I think the lakefront prices are or were higher than Lake Tahoe, and it's kind of crazy. So, and these billionaires have, and obviously probably a whole bunch of millionaires around Canandaigua Lake have lots of friends and want to go down to New York City and have their friends up here, and friends from around the world who visit the United States. Probably many of them fly into New York City, take the seaplane up to Canandaigua Lake, hang out with their friends here, stay at the lake house. They're probably going to do very well. You should check it out. See the bar, restaurants there that are open. And again, it helps the Finger Lakes to be on these lists, because each of these lists mentions the fact that we're a wine region. This one in Travel and Leisure says within striking distance of touring a vineyard or hiking. This is fantastic publicity that the tourism professionals in the Finger Lakes couldn't purchase this kind of advertising for the region. Again, having Travel and Leisure magazine call it pilgrimage worthy, and I haven't gone through the list of 73 other properties from 29 countries, but I'm guessing, given that the Finger Lakes is within a day's drive for 65 million people, that the Finger Lakes is easier to get to in the lake house with or without the seaplane than most of these other 73 properties. But I'll look at it and let you know next week how we fare in terms of just being accessible. And also, there was a note out of Cornell. I think it was in the Cornell Newswise carried it. It was a Cornell byline. But the spotted lanternfly, I haven't talked about it this year very much. I did talk about it quite a bit in the fall last year while I was scouting for it. And this is an invasive species that is colonized major parts of Pennsylvania. They keep adding quarantine counties, and now they're up to, 30 or 35 counties in Pennsylvania. They are really struggling to slow it down. It is decimating vineyards, trees, orchards. This is probably the most challenging invasive species that we've faced in decades. There have just been sporadic sightings of these spotted lanternflies in New York State up until last fall. There's one found in Penn Yan a year ago, and one in Albany, and I think one in Rochester even. But probably came up on someone's car from Pennsylvania. I think most of them were found dead, although I'm not sure about the one in Albany. There were some egg masses and adults found in Staten Island last year. But then in November, we got word that there were egg masses and adults found in Ithaca, which is horrible news for the Finger Lakes. This insect has just wiped out acres of vineyards in Pennsylvania, and that's in vineyards that they're trying to spray, with pesticides. They're trying to control it, and they can't in Pennsylvania. So this pest is something that New York State is very worried about, and the news that there were egg masses found in Ithaca was horrible news. The article that came out just last week says that they are removing 50 trees in Ithaca, right near Cornell University, because they have found egg masses on these trees. And you can't, people have been posting about gypsy moth caterpillars, which also have egg masses on trees. And they can be devastating for a year or two. This spotted lanternfly is a whole nother level of devastation, and the egg masses of this spotted lanternfly are often way up in the trees. So you, unless you are able to program a drone to go up and get them, which someday maybe we can do that. We're quite a ways from figuring that out, I think, at this point. So they're having to cut these trees down, 50 trees, which is a lot of trees. You know, if you look around your property or your block you live on or area you live and, you know, count up to 50 trees, it is a lot of trees they're taking down, which I see as a good sign. The article says that Pennsylvania did not go as aggressively after this, and I think they regret it. So New York State taking this very seriously, and again, removing 50 trees in Ithaca, and starting to do more work to educate people about what this spotted lanternfly looks like. It is particularly damaging to vineyards. So, you know, and there are a lot of people from Pennsylvania that come up to visit the Finger Lakes, the wineries, the waterfalls, etc. And so there's kind of a continuous conduit for these spotted lantern flies to hitch a ride. And so we need to be vigilant and keep our eyes open. If you think you see one, you should kill it and then inform the DEC, save it, put it in a Ziploc, save it, and call the DEC to get instructions on what to do with it. I don't know if they want it or if they want you to send them a photo of it, but you really need to keep that proof that you saw it. You want to kill it. You don't want to just let it fly around. And so look it up online. There's plenty of information. In fact, if you see some of the videos from Pennsylvania, they should make you very worried about what could happen here. Now, Cornell's doing some work on a couple of bacterium that are pretty promising for controlling this eventually, but we need to buy time. We need to buy a few years for them to work out those details. And we buy that time by being extra vigilant, by taking down these 50 trees in Ithaca. And again, they could appear anywhere around New York State. You could see them on a sidewalk in Rochester. You could find them on a golf course in the Finger Lakes. You could find them, near a boat launch. There's hotels. I mean, it could be a neighbor, you know, has a friend or family member come up from Pennsylvania, and those spotted lantern flies hitch a ride. Now, they start to hatch out in May. And so if egg cases have been laid on the underneath of a car, on some wood that's or stone that's moved here, and we need to be extra careful. So, seriously, if you have family or friends coming from Pennsylvania in May, I would ask them to carefully examine the underneath of their car and boat trailer or boat or whatever they might be bringing with them. And these insects seem to like to lay their egg masses on something that has the texture of bark and the undercoating of cars, like under wheel wells. It kind of has that texture. And so that is one of the places that they can lay these egg masses, which then will hatch out. And if their car is parked, in your or in your neighbor's driveway, and it happens to be at the point in May when these hatch out, when people are starting to come for some graduations or just to pick kids up from college, and there's all sorts of reasons they might be here, weddings. But if those hatch out and you have a couple hundred little juvenile spotted lantern flies, which move very fast. They don't fly. They just, they're a leaf hopper. They move around very quickly. They don't fly at that stage. We are in deep, deep trouble. And that is likely to happen. So learn a little bit about it. Be proactive. If you know a neighbor says they have a friend coming from Pennsylvania, ask them if they know about the spotted lantern fly, and ask them to please check their vehicle underneath the vehicle. You know, take a flashlight, get down, and make sure. You know, at this point, you just need to check it once, because they lay their egg masses in October, November. So if you don't have any egg masses on your car now, then you're fine. But if you went to visit someone in Pennsylvania, especially Philadelphia and some of the, there's like 30 counties that are really being hit hard, you may have egg masses on your car and didn't know it all winter. So again, we need to be vigilant. We need to buy time for Cornell to wrap up this research on some potential controls. And these are not genetically engineered bacterium. These are naturally occurring bacterium. They discovered when Cornell found dead lantern flies, which hadn't been killed by a pesticide, just died of quote unquote natural causes. This bacterium. So there is some hope, but again, the next couple of years are going to be really crucial in keeping it out of New York State. So look it up online, watch some of the YouTube videos about them in Pennsylvania. And once you watch a couple of videos of how many of these spotted lantern flies show up, you will be even more vigilant to look for them here. We'll be back next Saturday with Gardening, Food, Finger Lakes. Michael Warren Thomas here, SaverLife.com. Have a great day.